You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Watford and England legend, Luther Blissett. Jamie has come in with stories from the front pages. Let me guess. Is it... I don't know. Could it be Brexit?
As it happens, it is. Although that's not the front page of The Sun.
Right.
That's actually Sir Mick Jagger saying he'll have heart surgery. I think they just got bored of Brexit now. Doesn't sell as many papers as Mick Jagger having heart surgery.
No, that's true. Mark Steele, who's a very, very funny comic who I know, actually did a tweet yesterday saying if they told us that Brexit was going to result in us all being sold into slavery, we'd all go, oh, at least it's over. Anyway, it is going on.
I think that's right. Yeah, but it's not over yet. They had another round of voting yesterday.
Indicative votes.
More indicative votes. Didn't
indicative votes. Well, it's not my joke. I heard it, though. It made me laugh. Anyway. Almost got a customs union, didn't we?
Yeah, thank goodness we didn't get that.
Oh, I live for the customs union, mate. I'd like to
you
be...
You like a bit of customs union.
I love a bit of customs union. I remember when I was a kid, my mum said, what do you want to do when you grow up? I says, I want to be involved in a customs union, mum.
And you've had that for most of your life, luckily.
All my life. There's been moments lying awake at night going, how is the customs union going?
Yeah.
My missus going, try and settle down. I can't. Oh, we're unionised custom-wise.
Yeah, but 17.4 million people want to take that away from you. And after last night, it looks like potentially they might be successful. Last night, they could have agreed to stay in the customs union. Obviously, we might still end up staying in it if she manages to get that vote through in future. But the four votes which were rejected yesterday were for a sort of mostly a softer Brexit.
Norway plus, wasn't there? Norway plus.
Which isn't Brexit.
No, that's just beer goes up to £9.50 a pint. That is it, yeah. Norway plus, as far as I understand. I mean, in the end, none of them solved the problem of Northern Ireland.
No, I think if it was a customs union, then Northern Ireland would have a closer agreement with the rest of the EU. But
do they want that? Ulster says no!
Don't they do?
They love a march, don't they, over there? They love a march, don't they? They have about 3,000 marches a year. It's like 20 marches a day. So they just like, I'm just going down the shops. 20 Benson and Hedges. No tar.
No.
Oh, I love it.
You know, I haven't had a lot of sleep.
Don't stop. I haven't had a lot of sleep.
You know that. Anyway.
No, anyway, that's not happening. That'll stay in the customs union.
So what is going to happen? Do we know?
No, no one knows now. Potentially, right. I think maybe slightly closer to a no deal.
No deal?
Oh my God. Slightly closer now that they've rejected this customs union thing.
Isn't that a worry? Are you worried?
I tell you what,
I'm not worried either way.
You're not?
Because at the end of the day, will we survive whatever comes? Yes, we will.
Well, we'll survive.
Will we be here on a Tuesday morning if we crash out without a deal? Yes.
Will we have enough to eat? We're not sure. Will we have medical supplies? Who knows? I mean, there's all that as well. I don't know.
But isn't that scaremongering, a lot of that?
Well, we'll find out, won't we, in about a week and a half's time, I guess. April the 12th, isn't it? That's the date, isn't it? D-Day or no D-Day?
Yeah. Do you know, customs union vote only lost by 3 votes
yesterday.
Yeah,
I know. And the Lib Dems went the other way. A couple of Lib Dems go that way, and then suddenly we're in with the customs union.
Yeah, a couple of votes.
Yeah. Very close. But it went at 52-48, I believe.
That wouldn't be exercising the will of the people, would it, though?
I'm sick of the will of the people, aren't you? I don't want to hear another word about the will of the people. Honestly, the will of the people can do one, as far as I'm concerned. Genuinely. If there's one thing I don't want to hear...
It's the will of the people that's got us here, didn't it?
I don't want to hear...
Well, some of the people.
Some of the people. 1 million of whom are statistically dead. By the way, I'm not having a go at them.
Yeah.
Don't speak ill of the dead. I'm just saying they're gone.
Quite a morbid website that is, isn't it? Which counts how many people who voted leave who have now died.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems a bit mad.
And basically, the idea of it is to show that now, because lots of people have died who voted leave, the balance has been tipped now in favour of Remain. That's what the website says.
Honestly, Jamie, I know you're a leave vote, but honestly, do you not think if they had another vote now, it would be Remain?
Yeah, it would be Remain. I might even vote Remain.
Not by much, but it would be Remain.
Yeah, it would be
knowing
Remain.
What we know now.
But then, if that's the case, then surely we'd have to have a referendum, another referendum, to prove that that is the right one, because that seems to be the way
best
it's going to go.
Though. Best of three.
But if we get best of three, somebody would go on, mate, best of five.
Best of penalties. Maybe we should do a penalty.
I either want to remain now or crash out with that deal. I don't want this half-assed nonsense.
You're a bit extreme, aren't you?
Yeah, well, just this halfway house is just terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It ain't great. Anyway, on it goes. They had a naked protest, didn't they, in the Parliament yesterday? They did.
Sounds
they
awful.
They look very, very nice.
They glued their buns to the glass, didn't they?
They did, and they tried to pull one of these blokes off, and I thought, well, that's not going to make him leave. Anyway, 6:49. Well, we talked about... Oh, Neil Warnock. We're talking about Neil Warnock, the most leave manager on earth, isn't he? I mean, let's be fair. I mean, he said that, didn't he? Oh, yeah. He said that. So Neil Warnock made some quite, well, slightly ridiculous comments, didn't he? I mean, I'll read what he said. He said, "When I came in yesterday, my wife said to me, 'Darling, if you wanted to thump the referee and linesman, I wouldn't have stopped you. It was so unjust.'" This is what Neil Warnock said. Now, Ian Dennis, who is a Five Live commentator and a brilliant commentator at that, he said, "This is all very well for Neil Warnock to say something like that, but what about referees in parks on Sundays?"
And that is the big
who get
issue
threatened
with
by
it.
This.
And
sort of
some
stuff.
Of these people do get punched, and a lot worse.
You know, I mean, Warnock said that he wondered if he was being punished because of his reputation for criticising and confronting referees, and claimed that Mike Riley, who is the sort of head of the referees, was overseeing a poor standard of refereeing. The linesman, yes, they said sorry to me after the game, but it's too late. What good in his apology? Well, he makes a point there.
That is a good point. I'd go with that one. But
okay, we're going to get VAR next season. Season too late for Neil Warnock because Cardiff will be in the Championship by then.
But it don't matter at the end of the, you know, at the end of the day, the VAR thing, it hasn't been great for them, but I'm sure VAR would have probably pulled up other things which may have worked against them as well. There's a balance which goes through life, and I mean he intimated towards that himself by saying, is this payback for the way that he has been towards referees all his career? It could be. Who knows?
I doubt it, though. I think the referees do try and do the best they can. But they try and be completely unbiased.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that the referees are doing it deliberately. There's just sometimes that things just go against you because that is the way in the order of
but
things.
But how were you?
Happens.
I mean, when this happened to you, when you were playing, right? I mean, did you have a sense of grievance that the big teams were getting the decisions?
You always felt that way that they would, but you knew that's what it was, and so the idea was you limit the opportunities for that to happen as much as you can. You didn't put yourself in that position where you would you'd get a decision that go against you, you know. And when you're playing against very tricky wingers, or you know, you'd always say to the fullback, you know, don't go to ground if you're making a challenge for the ball, because that was the lethal one. You slide in for a tackle, and that is an invitation to say, just fall over my leg. And then people would do it.
So dangerous free kick.
Yes, you don't put yourself in that sort of position.
Do you think the referees know the law but don't know the game, as Bill Shankly used to say?
I think they know the law very, very well, you know, and they can probably. But when
the
it comes,
game.
But when it comes to the actual game and the way the game has changed, and that now I don't think they are right in the way they are. They're managing games. They're managing games too strictly to everything that's been spoken about the game. You know, when it comes back to rules, I've never seen any game of football, especially a game that involves two teams in confrontation, anything that runs the way that the rule book would always give you an answer to.
Yeah.
You know, and the referee should be allowed game to game, within reason, to referee, you know, according to the way that game is on that day. There are certain things that have, you know, the offside, but there are certain things that shouldn't. And the offside one is one that really winds me up. You know, people can say that as much as they like. That goal what Bernardo Silva scored from the edge of the box. They had, what was it, four players in offside position?
I don't think they were in the way, though.
It doesn't matter. They are in the box. They're in the box, and everybody's gone up above. And this shot has come through a crowd of players, and those players are the wrong. How can they not be? How can you not be interfering if you're in the box?
We understand that the rules are that. You know what? Who was in goal for them? Sergio Rico. His eye line wasn't. They weren't in his eye line. They
may not be
in the way.
But your peripheral vision, when you're looking at something, you're seeing that. But you can also see all of them.
I see that.
You can see all of that as well. And All it takes is that slight distraction for that millisecond when you maybe just check. And that could be the moment that the ball goes by. It allows
you know
the ball
what?
To go by.
Okay, that is a separate discussion. But I just want to get back to Neil Warnock and what he said about this thing about wanting to thump the referee and linesman and his missus wouldn't have stopped him.
Out of order.
I mean, he really, I think for that, he should get punished.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah,
because
and I mean, I've got a lot of time.
It's inciting violence against referees.
It is. I've got a lot of time for Neil Warnock but on this occasion with this. I think, you know, if he gets the rule book thrown at him, then he deserves it.
Do you think, by the way, to a certain extent, they maybe shouldn't interview people straight after the game because your blood's up, isn't it? I mean, you saw what, after that game against Chelsea, Warnock was standing on the pitch trying to eyeball the linesman and the referee. And he's gutted because he knows they've only got four winnable games, basically. Yeah. And he knew that was 3 points they could have had, but for a very, very poor decision. Let's
That's
be
right.
fair, Aspilicueta was about 3 foot offside.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, Jamie is saying he said this stuff the next day. Some of it might have been post-game, but some of this stuff was the next day.
Yeah, and the thing is, he still would have been, emotionally, would still have been up about it because this is his job on the line, this is his job. This is that dream job of being a manager in the Premier League and the miracles that he has performed so far with that group of players so far this season. Because let's face it, after the first four or five games, who would have thought they'd have been even in with a shout
of
staying up?
We all thought the Cardiff were nailed on
to go
down.
We thought they were the first ones that would have been relegated.
Nailed on. So there are certain things that he said you would disagree with. This thing about thumping the referee and linesman, we know that's ridiculous. But when he said, it's the way that Riley is training all the referees. They're all the same. They're trying to be robots. I think he has a fair point
there. I think
there
he does have a point
because
with that
it's
one.
Nice to see a bit of latitude so that you're taking account of what's going on in the game.
Yeah.
You know, because if you start in a local derby, say, in a big local derby, you would referee that game slightly differently to how you would referee a game between two teams who are not natural rivals.
Well, you would. You know, sometimes what you do in the derby, if you know, in a derby game, you know that the challenge is going to be fierce and whatever. You've got to make that distinction of how far you let things go.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, you pull people up on it, but the moment you start booking somebody, you now set the bar.
You're making a rod for your back.
And say, this is what you're going to do.
All right. We are going to be talking about that all morning. By the way, the other big news is, well, a couple of bits of big news. Jordan Pickford got involved in a brawl outside a bar in Sunderland. I mean, what the hell? I mean, I know it's his hometown, but actually, I'm not sure there is a nice bar in Sunderland. I think they're all pretty grim, to be honest. But then don't go out to a bar in Sunderland.
Problem,
what are you doing?
The problem with these players are, you know, yes, they've come from humble beginnings, most of these players, and they like to go, but that's fine. But you have to choose when you go to these places and how long you're there for. And, you know, you keep away from places where drink is involved.
And he needs his mates to look after him a little bit.
That is essential that you do
you
that.
You need to have a couple of essentially designated drivers with you who go, Jordan, it's time to go home.
Yeah.
And you're going to listen to them.
This is Love Sport.
Good morning. Yeah, there was a chap locked in the loo on the train from London to Reading yesterday.
It's only 20 minutes.
Yeah, no, but he was stuck. He was stuck in for an hour.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
It was out of order. The toilet was so. I mean, it's sort of his own fault for going.
I thought you were saying it's out of order that he was locked in the loo for an hour, which it is, to be honest.
Both out of order. Right. Out of order of his mates, apparently, who just laughed and didn't try and help him out.
That is about right. That is exactly what mates are supposed to do.
Blokes are terrible, aren't they?
You do stupid things. You deserve what happened.
Women would be calling the authorities, wouldn't they? Help! Help! She's trapped in the loo. We need to help her. Blokes go, all right, mate. We'll see you on the other side. Oh, we've got another beer. We've got
spares.
We're
just down to the bar.
Yeah. We've got spares now.
We'll have yours.
All that. Blokes are not helpful at all. Anyway, he was trapped for an hour.
Held up for an hour, yeah, on, like you say, an otherwise short journey. So not quite so funny probably for the other passengers if they're in a rush to get to Reading.
Or if they're in a rush to go to the loo either.
Well, yeah, that was out of order anyway, so they couldn't have gone there.
What was he doing getting in there?
I don't know.
So he shouldn't have gone in.
This story is missing quite a lot of detail.
Was it one of the electronic loos? Because I don't like using them.
Talking
I've
ones.
Got a bit... Oh, the one talking of the... ones. Hello, it's your toilet here. Get away from it. You get on the Virgin train. Awful. No. The toilet talks to you. It doesn't talk to you. There's a recorded voice. It's not actually a talking toilet.
Toilet conversation. Yeah, really good, is it?
Well,
it's
well,
never good
it.
At any time.
I don't need
good.
It. I don't need a young woman going, hi, it's your toilet here. You know what? I know what I'm doing. I don't need your help. I remember once going to a public loo and a man knocked on the door. It was in India. He goes, hello, can I help you? And I said, I'm fine, thank you very much. I've been to a toilet many, many times. I know what I'm about. I mean, to be honest, I felt like sort of playing along with it and going, yeah, if you could, that'd be really nice. Hold this. I'm talking about my phone.
Driverless cars are they're set to be tested on UK roads. Oh. Trialling 5 cars a day. And night, all days of the week.
And are they telling us where, just so we can avoid those areas?
No, it doesn't tell you where.
No, because they don't want people to.
They want you to surprise you. Yeah, I've actually seen one of the trials for it. I was playing in a charity golf day for Paul Jones, the ex-Liverpool and whatever goalkeeper, last year at Goodwood. And in the grounds, they had a driverless car. And it was being followed by... obviously the guy with the operating it and stuff to make sure everything's okay. And it was quite funny thinking, why are all these cars driving along in it? And that it was, they were testing it obviously in that area.
Right.
Yeah, it was quite something.
It didn't bump into anything.
Thinking like, there's nobody in that car.
Yeah.
it was good.
I mean, if you want to abuse someone in a car, if you want to do some rude sign to them when they've cut you up, and there's no one in there.
You feel like an idiot if you're flipping the bird
at a driverless car. Yeah. I mean, that'd be a bit unfortunate, wouldn't it?
I can't. It's hard to imagine a world where they're all just driving around without drivers.
Did you not see iRobot? It's coming, man. It's coming.
It's going to happen soon. Listen, we imagine a world where there was no internet. We lived in that world. There's no Snapchat or any of that stuff. Yeah, you didn't have to swipe left or right, which is to go and talk to someone in the bar.
And was a better place.
Was it?
It was. Know.
What?
It was better because we never got all this abuse from people we didn't know.
Yeah, there is that. What you did? You got about 30,000 a week chatting racist stuff at you.
Yeah, but not the same. Not the same.
You can live with that.
You can live with that, apparently, yeah. But somebody having a go at him on Twitter, I'm not having that.
Yeah, it was only twice a week, that's you see, true. Normally. It's only twice a week, now it's every day,
it is.
All
it's
day.
It was meeting up with someone, though, wasn't it? That you had to just, like, call the landline, whatever, agree to meet in a place. And if one of you was late, no way of telling the other one.
And then just hope. They could have died on the way, and there was nothing you could do.
Not you'd still be sat there. Save them from dying, really.
No, but at least somebody could have given you a message saying, is this a person she's meeting? Oh, she's no longer coming. Oh, thanks. At least I don't have to wait around.
That's true.
I can go home and prepare for the funeral.
We all got them phone calls at one time anyway.
We did. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, she's not coming.
Oh. Did you get stood up? I got stood up a couple of times.
No, I know. Thank. No. No.
Never?
Never.
Have you been stood up?
No, not on a date, no.
I was stood up a couple of times.
Were you?
Yeah.
Was it a blind date or what?
It was, one was a blind date, one was a date where we'd met and then she just didn't turn up. Mm. I know, it was horrible. It's not very nice. So I know there was meant to be a funny ending.
You met, got a number and then thought you...
And then we said, you've come out. She went, yeah, okay. And then she didn't turn up.
And then did she ghost you? You know what I mean by ghosting?
No.
Where basically you just stop replying to any of their messages, act like they don't exist.
Well, it wasn't. It's different back then because you'd phone up the house and she wouldn't pick up the phone. That's what it was. There's no text. Or
how did she
like
know?
That.
Oh yeah, of course. How did she know it was you that was calling?
Well,
they wouldn't pick the phone up because they'd do the call thingy afterwards, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. What you could do is you could, as soon as you rung off, they could pick up the phone and then dial 1471.
Yeah.
And you could find out who it was.
And they did have a system actually that you could get this little electronic little box thing, which is plugged into your phone socket, and it actually come up with the number of whom was calling.
That's advanced. That
was, it was. Yeah. It was. It was brilliant. It was like, oh, that's who it is. That one to talk to them.
Clever.
Yeah. I mean, we just missed out on the time when you'd phoned up and say, can I have Watford 4521, please? That was then. And a lady in the exchange would put a thing in the hole, like a guitar plugging in the amp.
Yeah.
But it's different. Yeah, it's different now. But I have, I've been stood up a couple of times. Yeah.
It's a character. You've moved on.
I've never really forgiven
her. Did you feel that sympathy coming your way then? Oh, well.
Absolutely none. None whatsoever. Well, you can see I'm all right now. I'm not that emotionally scarred.
I know he's happy in a relationship now. He can talk about these things on the radio, so.
Yeah. I can.
So, if she's listening then.
Not what you missed out on. Love Sport Breakfast Show. Hey, you could have been lying in bed now on your own. Having to do all the kids stuff yourself. Anyway.
Getting woken up at 4:30.
Getting woken up by half four. Where's my pants? Did you wash my pants? Wake up.
Driverless cars, something in the future.
Oh, yeah, that's what we were talking about.
And another part of the future, potentially, smart pyjamas.
What?
To help people sleep. could be available in 2 years. They've got 5 soft sensors monitoring heartbeat, breathing, sleep posture, and a circuit board button.
Right.
Do you struggle to sleep, either of you two?
Not once I go to bed, no. I did, Put my head down, off I go.
Really? I did last night. Yeah,
I did. I did last night as well, actually.
Oh, blimey. Were you thinking about each other?
It must have been that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, if I'd have had smart pyjamas, I'd have been all right. I'd have been out like a light.
Mm.
Right.
It is more annoying as well when you can't sleep, when you know you have to be up at that time, isn't it?
Well, then you're just getting nervous and angry, and then you're not going to sleep at all.
Yeah, but don't you think the worst time for that is, and I imagine it's the same for you, when you've had a gig and you get home, if it's a late one, you can't sleep. It used to happen after games, in evening games, you know, when you'd still be replaying the game at like 1 o'clock or so in the morning. It'd still be going through it, and you just could not come down from that.
What did you do to come down from that?
Right. Just learn.
Keep it broadcast.
Learn. you learn techniques.
Really? I said keep it broadcastable.
Yes, you learn techniques. To breathe in and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, breathing techniques. Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah, okay. Yeah, heavy breathing techniques. Right, okay, fair enough.
Well, with these smart pyjamas, those techniques might be a thing of the past.
Right. Mm. Okay, how much are they, smart pyjamas? I don't like the idea of going to bed with something that's got electronics on
it. And it's telling you to go to sleep.
Go to sleep. It's whispering quietly.
Yeah.
£75 to £150.
Right, depending on how smart you want them.
And how often do you have to replace them? Can you stick them in a wash?
No, can you put them
in on a 40-degree wash?
That's a good point. You might have to wash them by hand.
Well, if it's a circuit board, I wouldn't want to put water anywhere near them. To be honest,
and how do you charge them?
Yeah, charge up your pyjamas.
Does it do?
Oh, no, I haven't charged my pyjamas.
Does it do by movement? By your movement generates it to power them up, or what? Or you have to plug them into the main.
There are,
or plug them into your computer or your phone.
As with a number of the stories that you bring in, there are more questions than answers, Jamie. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, I'll have
smart pyjamas. I've got thick pyjamas at the moment. Really stupid Jordan Pickford level pyjamas.
Love sports.
Joining us now is the former Arsenal player and manager and keen golfer who I saw at South Arts the other day, George Graham. Morning, George.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
George, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
George, you know what? I want to start with Mesut Ozil. How would you have managed a player like him?
Well, when I was a manager, I'd probably have bought the brilliant midfield player, Vieira. Put him one side and Petit the other side and put Mosel in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, you got those two behind him, then you're absolutely fine, aren't you?
And he's a real, real quality player in possession. There's no question about it. And if they can just get him just working a bit harder without possession, I think they've got a fantastic player.
Yeah, and I think he's starting to do what Unai Emery wants him to do. And the fact that he started him in the last 4 games shows that he's starting to trust him.
Yeah, there's no question about his ability in possession. But as I said, the modern game now, you play when you've got the ball and you play when you haven't got the ball.
Yeah.
And this is the modern way now. And he's just got to work a lot harder with the attitude as well as the physical side of the game. And I think they've got a fantastic player, one of the best.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you say that on that, George. And I mean, I don't think anybody has been able to organise a team to defend as well as you do. Because I think Arsene Wenger definitely benefited from that, the work that you put in with those boys at Arsenal when you were there. So for me, the thing about Ozil is, he doesn't necessarily have to go back and make tackles and that. He's just got to fill areas for me and help the team that they're defending. He hasn't got to be the main one to be doing all that, does he?
Correct. I mean, he's never going to begin into flying tackles. In the old days, the midfield players like Graeme Souness was excellent on the ball, but boy, was he tough without the ball.
Yes.
And nobody expects Ozil to do that. But I think they do expect him, as you rightly said there, to when they lose the ball, to get back into the shape that the team is playing. And I think last night, I think he won man of the match last night.
Yeah.
I thought it was excellent. And if he can get that on a regular basis, especially as Arsenal at home, they've been fantastic this season. Their away form has got to improve a lot. I think their last 7 games, they've got 5 away from home and 2 at home. So they've got to improve probably a lot away from home.
Yeah, I mean, going on from that on the defensive side of what Arsenal are playing, how do you think he can improve? If he cannot bring in a couple of players like another centre half or another fullback or whatever into that team for next season. How is he going to go about, or how can he go about improving that Arsenal defence?
The same way as most managers, they go back, they do it on the training ground. I've seen Arsenal recently, and they've been excellent away from the away without the ball. And I think that that happens on the training pitch.
Yeah.
You can just see, well, when you're watching them, you can just see there's a lot more enthusiasm, there's a lot more drive. One of the papers this morning, they were talking about the mentality of the Arsenal team just now. I think it's very, very strong, and he's got them. But they still, they're a bit short on real, real quality if you want to get into the top four. Saying that, I think they've got a very good chance of getting in the top four.
It does feel that way. So, I mean, we were talking about the fact that they got 63 points last season and they reached 63 last night. It does feel like there's progression, doesn't it?
Without doubt. I mean, you know, you just see the Emery on the touchline and the enthusiasm. I'm not saying that's everything, but there's definitely into the way the players play with this drive, a lot more drive in the play. But that's at home. You know, away from home, they're still a bit vulnerable, so they've got to put that right.
Yes, they do, and they've got to put it right in the next few weeks. One other thing I wanted to ask about was Aaron Ramsey. He's having a really great season this season. Can you understand a decision to let him go on a free to Juventus?
Well, it's a modern way now. The clubs, usually, with 2 years to go in the contract, they usually sit down and they start talking. And then you've got an indication of, is the player going to stay or is he going to go? And obviously, they've made a mistake, a big mistake, I think, anyway, letting Ramsey go. I do think he's a quality player, especially from an attacking sense. Again, not the best in midfield, winning the ball back for you.
No.
But gets goals. I think he's a great player going forward, but not necessarily defending.
Quite. George, nice to speak to you, as always.
Yep. That's okay, no problem.
Thanks, George. That is George Graham there, former Arsenal player and manager. And like you say, his teams knew how to defend, didn't they?
Yeah, and they defended so well. And, you know, the thing is, the players under him took responsibility for the job they had to do, and they took that responsibility on it and did it very well.
Yeah, and I mean, you know what, they kept a clean sheet last night, and when you think they kept a clean sheet against Manchester United the other week as well, you know, they are starting to defend a bit better. I think Leno's doing a decent job in goal.
Yes,
but Mustafi is generally felt by the Arsenal fans to be still a bit of a liability. As somebody actually tweeted yesterday, cause of death, watching Mustafi's distribution. Which did make me laugh. The fans are funny, there's no doubt about that. And it did, I mean, me and my son were sitting there laughing at some of the things Mustafi was doing. My son's sitting there going, he won a World Cup. How the hell did he win a World Cup? Well, we can't quite work it out, to be honest. But, you know,
right place, right time.
Very possible.
This is Love Sport.
Joining us now is the senior reporter of football.london, Phil Spencer. Morning, Phil. I guess McLaren's position at the club was no longer tenable, was it?
No, I mean, it is a difficult one. I think it was obviously a disappointing season, or more to the point, a disappointing second half to the season. But I do think it's important to keep everything in perspective. I think with the situation surrounding the club, obviously being handed a hefty fine for breaching financial fair play in the summer, having the January transfer embargo in the transfer window just gone, I do think that it was a really difficult situation for Steve McLaren to inherit. And while obviously when you've only won one game in the league since Boxing Day, I do think it's right ultimately that he was sacked from the role. But I do think that there's an element of sympathy as well, because a lot of the situation that he came into was not down to him, and it was down to mistakes made by the club previously.
Yeah, £42 million there to pay out in a fine. I mean, he's hamstrung from the start, isn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, he came in, from the end of last season, they'd lost a number of QPR's key players over the summer, the higher earners like Neto Manua, Jack Robinson, James Perch, Jamie Mackie. They also lost Alex Smithies, who was one of the best goalkeepers in the Championship last season. and they weren't really in a position to replace any of those players. So it was a threadbare squad from the start of the season, and it was only really at the end of the transfer window when they seemed to look at the squad and go, do you know what, I'm not entirely sure we've got enough to stay in the Championship, when they decided to make the move for the likes of Jeff Cameron and Naki Wells and Tom Ahmed to try and bring the squad up to scratch. But it was a really difficult position for him to inherit. And like I said, I think there is a degree of sympathy for him for what's ultimately happened.
Yeah, I think so. But obviously moving on, they've looking forward now for QPR, they've obviously spoken to Tim Sherwood. Would he be the right person for them, or do they need to look at as maybe someone a bit younger, or give somebody a chance from lower down to come in and make a name for themselves and turn their fortunes around?
Well, I think there's a couple of considerations with who to bring in. I think first of all, they need to get the fans back on side. I think as much as QPR were doing well in the first half of the season, even then, I don't think a large proportion of the QPR fans, they never really bought into Steve McLaren, and there was never really that kind of connection with him.
No.
So I think whoever it is that comes in, I think the fans do need to buy into them, and whether that's them being someone who's got an affinity for QPR, whether it be a former player, or even just someone who's got a slightly more, I suppose, like a bigger personality, someone who the fans are going to buy into. I think they do need someone like that to kind of get the fans back on side, particularly during this difficult time. I think as far as Tim Sherwood is concerned, I think he certainly fits, he ticks that first box, because he is a big personality, he is quite outspoken, and he's I think he is someone that the fans will buy into. But the other part of it is the fact that he's what he did at Tottenham, obviously working in the youth setup there and then taking over as manager. One of the key things that he did well there was bringing young players into the first team, which is going to be a crucial part of the remit for whoever the next manager of QPR is.
Harry Kane, wasn't it? Didn't he bring Harry Kane?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. And so what he did well was putting his arm around the shoulders of these players, saying, you are good enough to play at first team level. And that's going to be a key part for players like Ilias Chair, Paul Smith, who've been out on loan this season, who are going to come in next year and who are going to be central players in the first team.
Yeah, and what about a move to a new stadium? I mean, I was hearing stories about they don't particularly want to play at Loftus Road anymore, and they're talking about possibly redeveloping the Linford Christie Stadium just so they can stay in the borough. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think it's one that they're making more from a business standpoint than probably a football standpoint. I think the cynics among the QPR fans would say, well, we're not selling out an 18,000 stadium at Loftus Road, so what would be the point in moving to another stadium which is bigger?
And that's a perfectly fair question, isn't it, Phil?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. It is a perfectly fair question, but I think the situation, as far as I understand it, is I think Loftus Road, with the location of it being obviously fairly central in London, I think it's got extremely high running costs, because there's a lot of houses nearby. It's an extremely residential area.
Yeah.
They are somewhat limited in what they can do outside of football matches in terms of events. If they were wanting to do things like concerts or corporate events, there's all sorts of licensing restrictions and all that kind of stuff, which I won't bore you with. But basically, it does kind of restrict what they are able to do to kind of recoup some of those losses. And yeah, I think from what they've pretty much said, it's Loftus Road, it's almost a black hole from a financial point of view, because they are just almost hemorrhaging money by being there.
Yeah, no corporate, apparently, or very little in the way of corporate work, is there, for Loftus Road? Phil, we'll leave it there. Nice to speak to you. That's Phil Spencer there, senior reporter at football.london.
Love sports.
Pochettino said in the paper today that Hugo Lloris remains his number one goalkeeper. I mean,
he's got to say that, hasn't he?
He does have to say that.
And what's he got to replace him?
Well, he's got Gazzaniga, who's doing well. Gazzaniga, yeah, he's in the cups.
Yeah, but he's not going to do that until the end of season, is he? This is before the new season. So he's got to keep him on side and keep him going, isn't he?
What if he makes another mistake at the World? If he makes
a big one on Wednesday, then he's got a decision to make, and that will be a proper decision.
And you don't think he's got a decision to make now already?
No, I don't think he needs to worry about it at this state, at this moment in time.
Have you seen the amount of mistakes that Lloris has made compared to the other goalkeepers?
Yeah.
I mean, he's given away more goals than any of the others. Yeah, the only one actually who's given away more is Jordan Pickford.
Started beginning of the season for him, didn't it? And it just has not got. Then he had that little little speeding thing as well in the middle. So it's not been a good year for him since the one in the World Cup.
Since the World Cup, yeah. I mean, it's all gone. Maybe it must be hard when you win the World Cup, right? It must be those to have another great season. Has any of that Spain team, that France team, had a great season this year? Like a really stunning season. Griezmann's doing all right at Atletico, but you know, Kante's been okay at Chelsea. Been played out of position. Pogba again. I mean, terrible start to the season under Mourinho. Got better under Solskjaer. Don't know what... Matuidi's doing all right.
There's a few, but they're just doing all right, aren't they? They're just doing all right. I think they just get... It's one of those things, just getting this season done, I think, in a lot of them, really, because, let's face it, it's a massive come down from where they were.
I guess that's what it's about, really. And there's no doubt that Hugo Lloris has suffered a little bit. And you can't just kick goalkeepers out. It's like centre forwards. Yeah. You have to let them play.
They have to go through it. Yeah, I think sometimes after the World Cup, I think there should be a year where they don't have any internationals of such. Everybody should get a break from it for a year.
Season. I know what you're saying, but it's costing Spurs points.
Yeah,
and if it costs Spurs the Champions League place, £100 million or whatever the money is in their new stadium, because they didn't have the bottle, if you like, or the wherewithal to replace their goalkeeper early enough. I mean,
there'll be contributing factors, aren't they? Bringing players in and all sorts of things will contribute to this. This is just one other thing to add to the list.
Well, he said he's not looking for a new goalkeeper, is what Pochettino said. But then,
maybe he's already found one. So he doesn't need to look anymore.
I've got one. I'll announce it at the end of the year. Yeah. This is the Comedy Breakfast on Love Sport Radio. A few minutes to go, and Jamie has come in with some stories.
Yeah, so the fixed odds betting terminals.
Yes, they've gone now to £2.
Yeah, they've gone down from £100 to £2.
Yes.
But yesterday they're accused of basically bypassing the new laws. What they've done instead is they've got virtual cycling they've introduced, where you can bet £500 in 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they've also got these new paper slips, which basically have the numbers 1 to 36 on them. Very, very similar to the roulette.
That's roulette.
Which people were addicted to.
Yeah.
Spending loads of money on the fixed odds machines.
Because they're making a fortune out of it, aren't they, the bookies? So they don't really want to go down from 100 to £2. But on the other hand, people are addicted to these things and maybe they shouldn't be assisted in their addiction.
Yeah, of course. I think it's quite right that the government decided to do this and bring it down to £2.
Yes.
And I think now they're going to have to look at it again, because they've basically still given people the opportunity to bet up to £500 in 2 minutes, which was the whole point, that we shouldn't be able to bet that much money.
£500 in 2 minutes. Yeah. I mean, I see people feeding these machines full of money, and I just think
it's always been done ever since these machines are out.
Yeah, but these are large numbers we're talking about.
Yeah, they are now. Yeah.
Yeah, you're protecting vulnerable people from it by changing it to £2. And by introducing these new measures on the same day that the amount that they can bet gets brought down, they're just getting it in through the back door and making sure that these people who are addicted to gambling are still able to gamble as much as they could before.
To get their
money. Yeah. Well, it's not good. I mean, £500 in 2 minutes, £15,000 in an hour. You could do.
Yeah.
If you were feeding it at that rate. Mm. I mean, it's just a ridiculous amount of money.
It's terrible.
It is.
And so hopefully they just kind of come in with some new legislation now. Something just to make sure that people can't bet that much money in that short space of time.
Yeah.
Surely that makes sense.
I would agree.
Yes. There's another...
Is that sorted?
Now we need the government to get involved. Right, here's another one. Yeah. This is a new suit that the Royal Marines might be wearing soon. Suit.
Oh, right. 300... soup. what is it?
Is it an intelligent suit?
Is it a smart suit?
It's a smart suit. It's not. It costs £340,000. It gives them wings.
Blooming heck. £340,000 for a suit.
Gives them wings, though.
Wings.
Wings. It's basically like a jetpack, but it weighs £60, 3D printed suits, and it could one day be used by Marines to assault an enemy ship by flying over the water and landing on the ship.
Oh, that's
pretty cool.
That looked pretty cool. See, that's Hollywood. That is like a Hollywood film, as opposed to earlier when someone hasn't tied their shoelaces up. As we were saying. You're going to go and see that film about the bloke with the shoelaces or the flying Marines? I'd want to go and see the flying Marines, I think, really.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great... That sounds brilliant.
Yeah, apparently...
Is that plausible? Flying Marines?
Well, I was thinking £340,000 just for one suit. That is going to, if you want a few people to attack a ship.
What about a waistcoat? Do you get a waistcoat with that as well? Just a two-piece. The waistcoat is another $100,000 for it. I mean, if you just wanted to attack a ship.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that they could shoot at these people in a suit.
Yeah, I was. I'll say it's probably not the best way to go about it, really. No. A man in a suit flying towards a ship.
Well, you think they've got their policy wrong?
They've got lots of guns on these ships.
They do. Rockets and all the rest of it. When I think of a man in a suit, I think of a bloke going towards some sort of job interview. But it's not that sort of suit.
No, I think it's going to be a big sort of metal, right. 60 pounds it weighs.
Two-tone. I was thinking of a two-tone suit, actually, with like side vents and three buttons. That sort of suit.
No, it's
thin
not
thin collars.
No,
not that sort of suit.
Certainly not like that.
Okay.
It goes 118 miles per hour.
Right. Sounds dangerous.
And that's as fast as a human body can like physically stand, basically, going on its own.
Right, what if it malfunctions?
Well, and starts going double that.
Yeah, a bit too fast.
Person just disintegrates
in
the air.
That'd be unlucky, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, look at my new suit. There he goes.
It's got 5 kerosene-fueled micro-gas turbines.
Sounds really safe, doesn't it?
2
kerosene fuel on it as well.
Yeah, but
if they shoot at you, you've got no chance.
But if you're in the...
You're shooting back.
We're going 180 miles per hour. You can get away.
Have you seen Iron Man?
I have seen Iron Man.
Well, then, that's what it is. And it's Iron Man.
Yeah, and we've all wanted to do that, haven't we?
Yeah, we
I'd
have.
I'd give it a go. If they said to me, do you want to fly in one of those suits? I'd go, yeah.
Also, if you're in the Marines anyway, then you're sort of up for a bit of danger, aren't you? You're putting your life at risk to save the country.
I agree.
So if anyone can wear these suits...
I don't think they do it to save the country. I think they just love the idea of what they do.
They, you know what, the ones I've met, I mean, I've entertained the troops quite a few times, and they do. They like a scrap.
The ones I've met really like a scrap.
They
love
do. Just point me in the right direction, and I'll shoot at them. Absolutely love it.
Didn't wind them up with any of your comedy then. Made sure you stayed on the right side of them.
Do you know what? There were jokes that I wrote, like when they were talking about whenever they lose one of the troop, they always say, he was so popular. We all liked him very much. And I used to talk about, why is it only popular soldiers ever get killed? Right? You know, you never hear about, oh, no, we didn't like him at all. That's why we put him up front. Frankly, we were glad he got it. And I thought, I won't do that.
No.
I won't do that because they probably won't like that, actually. Yeah.
You wrote that then, took it out, did you?
I wrote that and I thought, I won't try that. Yeah, no. maybe not.
That would have been brave.
Because I've got 60 blokes in front of me who are heavily armed. Yeah, tough crowd. I've got to be honest with you. Yeah.
And very finally, 2-year absence from our screens, line of duty. 8 million viewers lined up for duty to watch it. Yeah,
I've got it recorded. I haven't watched it yet.
Have
very
you?
Excited.
Yes, I say no more.
It's fabulous. I love the last four. Just I absolutely loved them.
Good, is it?
They're great. Have you watched any
no.
of them? No, of course you haven't. No. Well, you should. They're really, really good. I don't quite know why they're so good, but you just get very drawn in. Jeb Mercurio, who wrote The Bodyguard as well, wrote Line of Duty.
Oh,
and
really?
He's a brilliant storyteller. That's the point.
Oh, see, I like The Bodyguard, so maybe I'll give it a go.
Line of Duty, yeah.
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 All right, then. I'll have to watch it on... iPlayer, is it?
8,000,001.
It is now, yeah.
We've got another one. Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.
Love Sport.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.